Welcome to this Rapid Reaction podcast from the Reaction team. I'm Ian Martin, editor of Reaction, and Maggie Pagano, executive editor of Reaction, joins me. We're going to talk about today's budget, and it's all happening, of course, against the backdrop of the World Health Organization declaring coronavirus officially as a pandemic. Maggie, what did you make of the budget?
Well, can I actually go back a few hours? And we all woke up this morning to an emergency meeting of the Bank of England's Financial Policy Committee, where they took historic steps to try and ease the economy, cut interest rates to the lowest ever, announced another 100 billion of liquidity for small companies, and took away the countercyclical buffers against the banks. So I think you have to step back before the budget. You know, the authorities had already been out there. Both Carney and Sunak obviously had been talking for days. So the sense that we had that everything was quite calm actually is not true. Clearly, they have been very worried. And I think it just shows what has happened today shows the depth of the anxiety within the authorities.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that is it going to work? Will it make a meaningful difference, or is it just designed to show that they're on it?
I think it's both. I think it's designed to show they're on it, a little boost of confidence. I think the interest rate cut was inconsequential and possibly even taking us into dangerous territory. I don't think they needed to do that. I think it was the other measures they took to start up the funding for lending scheme to try and force the clearing banks to make sure that they've got money available to small businesses. That was the key. The interest rate cut was sort of the icing on the cake. But, you know, and a lot of people are already quite critical, it doesn't leave you any room to manoeuvre. And it takes us down to sort of Eurozone rates, negative territory.
It does. And lower interest rates are bad for banks. I mean, banking depends on interest rates as an emergency measure. It's interesting what they did with the capital requirements stuff, because it's been the main point of reassurance that you hear in the City and at Westminster. Look, Britain's banks are much better capitalized than they were in the 2008 crisis, which is true. Although there's a critique, which we've talked about before, about, well, is that a bit of an illusion? Because they're what some critics of increased capital requirements call concrete slippers, as in they're really, it's reassuring, it's a big number, and you have that capital to soak up losses if something goes wrong. But it's capital you can't deploy, you can't make use of it. So then reducing the requirements is essentially freeing up some of that money to deploy and to help the banks. So I think clearly a sensible decision. What then did you make of the budget? Rishi Sunak's first budget?
Yeah, and I thought he was very slick, and he sounded very capable. You know, no one would have believed this was his first appearance, and it was more. To my mind, he seemed as though he sort of meant it. It wasn't. He seemed a bit of a caricature before this moment, but I thought he stepped into the moment really well. It was clearly. This is the start of what we might call Johnsonian philosophy, and it's clearly is not the traditional Tory approach. It's a high spend, high investment in infrastructure. There were no tax cuts, which is what one would normally associate. The only tax cuts were actually against relief. There were some very good, on the plus side, some very good boosts for small businesses and for R&D and innovation. To my mind, they were perhaps the most important part of this budget. You know, all the stuff about roads and so forth, they're probably going to take another 10, 20 years. But the sort of first steps, meaningful innovation, enterprise zones, and moving the civil servants and the Treasury to the regions and these trade ambassadors, I thought was quite meaningful. It sort of shows that they're not just being populist words to the north. They weren't just being subservient, if you like, to earlier policy. So, yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I mean, where they're going to get the money from, of course, is the 64 dollar question.
Or billion question, yeah.
Or billion question even. And in this case, it will be billions and billions. Because it's, as we said, if the growth, OBR is going for 1.1% this year, which looks pretty optimistic to me.
Yeah. That's my problem with it. Yeah. Is that I think they've discovered a superstar. The Tory tribe think that this guy, they think that he's fantastic, and a new star is born. Potentially, he's the successor to Boris. So there's quite a lot of, even in fairly constrained, in difficult circumstances, there was quite a lot of levity and jollification on the Tory benches and the Commons. You could see during the budget. So they like the cut of his jib, and it was all rather well presented, very cleverly crafted speech, and very well delivered, it has to be said. Mm. I think the difficulty is, as you said, Maggie, where is the money coming from? I mean, the assumption is on, and I have two concerns. Well, firstly, there's just the scale of what they're doing in terms of extra borrowing, which is over the course of this parliament is really an extra 100 billion at least, plus the 12 billion of extra stuff of our money that they're deploying. Understandably, there's an emergency on, so I'm not saying there don't need to be emergency measures. Of course there need to be. I wrote for the Times last week saying it's got to be the coronavirus budget. So that's all quite correct. But the budget came in two parts. There was the coronavirus part of it, and then there was the enormous post-coronavirus, and they're gambling on the fact that it's going to have a relatively short effect, and that then there'll be this big splurge over the course of the rest of the parliament. Mm. The biggest problem, I think, is, as you mentioned, that growth figure. Now, the OBR, the Office for Budget Responsibility, its number, which was calculated back in February, or mid to late February, its numbers were done, which is a different, entirely different world, really. When you think of everything that's happened since then, was growth of 1.1% for the coming year. Now, that is highly implausible. If you just look at what's happening to economic activity, look at what's happening to the oil price, expectations on manufacturing and services, very difficult to see how you hit that. Now, if you don't then hit a number around that, or even, 0.5%, then strange things, not that difficult to predict, start to happen to your tax receipts, which then makes the gulf even bigger. It really balloons the deficit, and you're then relying in the short and medium term on even bigger borrowing. So I think the Tories shouldn't congratulate themselves, because the assumptions they're making are somewhat heroic. The question is that just understandable? Are they right to just go for it, do you think? I mean, quite a few of our listeners, I think, will be really worried by the scale of what they're doing,
and absolutely,
the audacity of the move leftwards.
And I think in the piece I wrote tonight on the budget, it will turn their traditional blue supporters purple. And I think Andrew Neil today said Lady Thatcher would have had the vapors if she'd seen this budget. It's certainly not a sort of right-wing, small state tight public spending Tory budget. But you could argue that what was the alternative? We've tried austerity. We have, despite that austerity and cutting things to the bone, actually seen fantastic growth. We've got virtually full employment. That maybe it was time to take a gamble. I'm not saying this is right, Ian. Just saying, what else was available to them in the armory? There is no doubt we have fantastic productivity in some parts of the UK, London, yeah. Cambridge, Oxford, other high-tech areas. The rest of the country has been starved of investment for decades, if not a century. So if you really can put resources and skills and some tax cuts and a boost, some sort of stimulus into regions, maybe we can see some sort of, return on this investment. As Sunak announced, those carbon capture new storage areas, two of them for the north, could bring 6,000 jobs to areas that have not had, and these are quite high-skilled jobs. So maybe the Tories are the new party of high-risk investment.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
But what else could they have done?
You mentioned carbon capture. Yeah, and I think I think it's a fair question. It's an open question. I'm just flagging up that I wish they were more honest about this, actually, because their claim that they're doing it within the existing fiscal rules, I think you really have to stretch the rules to say that. And they're going to have to do more of that later in the year, moving around current spending and pretending that it's investment. The fiscal rules, of course, which are meant to signal to the markets that everything that's being done is sensible and affordable, and to try and encourage the markets to trust the UK government. But mind you, it looks at the moment it doesn't look like borrowing is going to be a problem. But you are, and there is a line in the OBR paper on all of this, which does acknowledge that there are risks further down the line with this approach. If you're blowing up, you're expanding borrowing, and then something else unexpected happens in the economy or in the fallout from coronavirus, then there are, as I think the OBR itself says, there are potential inflationary risks. So if this is not, if this, as Kenneth Rogoff, the great economist, has said, if this is not just a demand shock, this is a supply shock, because it's going to disrupt global supply chains, then you end up with shortages, which feeds into inflation. Then you need higher rates, you can find yourself in a 70s style trap.
Stagflation.
Hopefully it won't come to that. And I mean, that's really the punt they're making, is that just announcing early on that they're prepared to spend to support things just keeps confidence going, and then we catch a lucky break. Just finally to ask you, Maggie, on the pandemic question today, and World Health Organization declaring it pandemic, how are you feeling on the coronavirus front? I have to say, at the moment, it doesn't feel like it's going to be a temporary economic event. It feels as though it's going to be quite enduring.
I think this is going to be we don't know, do we? I think that's the really dangerous, is that we're getting people sort of shooting to the stars. But the one of the experts at the National Infectious Diseases in the US warned, I believe, earlier on this evening, that this COVID-19 is 10 times more lethal than the seasonal flu. I mean, how that works out in the numbers, I don't know. But what is apparent is that it has changed behaviour already. I just saw a picture of the escalators sent to me by a friend at Charing Cross earlier on. Mm. Empty, not a soul. Now, you know, at 6:30 on a Wednesday evening, that's extraordinary. So it does depend, and just as you were saying, this is supply and demand. And the demand at the moment, over the next few weeks, is just going to collapse. So how that comes back is really tricky to foresee.
Because you've got to hope that it is that peak, that 2 to 4 week peak, and then, even if you don't get the all clear moment, that people do just want to sort of get out there and start planning again for July, August, September, and hope that there isn't a return of it in the autumn.
But they'll only do that if all the authorities, you know, are showing numbers showing that it is coming down.
Yes.
If they keep putting up another 22%, as I think we saw overnight, to 496. If that sort of keeps going over the next few months, I'm not sure people will. I don't know. We've not lived through something like this before, so
we need a vaccine.
A year.
Okay. On that extremely positive note, trying not to be too bearish. Can I just thank you, Maggie? We'll podcast another Rapid Reaction podcast tomorrow or Friday, depending on how the news shapes up. And we'll be back with a fuller, longer podcast with Alistair Benn, Deputy Editor of Reaction. But these are just these short 10-15 minutes bursts from us on our take of the day. And thank you very much for listening. If you're not a Reaction subscriber, go to www.reaction.life. It's really reasonable to subscribe, and you get all the great writing on the site. You also get my newsletter, and you get loads of great stuff and invites. Well, I was going to say invites to events.
Well, no, maybe not.
It's happening at the moment, anywhere at the moment.
Maybe lots of Zoom invites. We can have lots of sort of
events. But events will come back into fashion, and human beings will gather for a drink and listen to interesting people and hear about interesting new books and all that sort of stuff. So please sign up to Reaction. Until next time, thank you for listening.